All right, welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we're taking a look at a pretty significant labor law case that went all the way to the Supreme Court last year. Glacier Northwest v. Teamsters.
Yeah, definitely a big one.
Especially for you, our listeners out there, especially those of you who are in law school right now or thinking about it. This one really gets into some of the core issues in labor law.
Right. When a strike leads to property damage, can the employer sue? Or does federal labor law kind of override that?
We've got a bunch of stuff to look at, the Supreme Court's opinion, some analysis from legal experts. We're going to unpack it all.
Lay it all out.
Exactly. By the end, you'll understand the facts, the legal reasoning behind the decision, and what it means for the future of labor disputes.
Sounds good.
So to kick things off, what was the situation that led up to this Supreme Court case?
Well, we've got Glacier Northwest, a concrete supplier, and then we've got Teamsters Local 174, which is the union representing their drivers.
Classic labor dispute setup.
Yeah. And this whole thing started back in 2017 during some pretty contentious contract negotiations that eventually led to a strike.
Okay, so what's so special about concrete that makes this case stand out?
It's all about the fact that concrete is, well, perishable.
Perishable.
Once it's mixed, the clock is ticking. It starts to harden, especially in those big rotating drums on the cement trucks.
I can picture it.
And if it hardens too much, not only do you lose the concrete itself, but you could be looking at some serious damage to the trucks.
Okay. So time is really a major factor here.
It's a huge factor. And here's where it gets interesting, right? The union decided to call the strike right when a bunch of trucks were loaded up with wet concrete.
Oh, wow. So that doesn't sound like a coincidence.
Right. Glacier's claim is that this was a deliberate move by the union. They basically wanted to cause as much disruption and financial loss as possible by making sure that concrete would harden and become unusable.
A pretty aggressive tactic.
It is. And it's not just about when they called the strike, but also what the drivers did.
Okay, what happened?
Well, some drivers were already out making deliveries when the strike started, right? So they drove those loaded trucks back to the plant. But instead of finishing those deliveries or maybe doing something else that might have helped, they just left the trucks there, full of concrete, just sitting.
So Glacier was kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place, huh?
Yeah. They tried to save what they could, scrambling to empty the trucks and prevent damage to the equipment.
Damage control.
Exactly. But even with their efforts, a lot of the concrete was just a total loss.
So I'm guessing that's when Glacier decided to take legal action.
Yep. They weren't too happy about it. They filed a lawsuit against the union in state court, claiming what the union did was basically conversion and trespass to chattels.
So conversion, in this context, meaning they basically treated Glacier's concrete as their own.
Exactly. And trespass to chattels means, like, intentionally messing with someone else's property.
Makes sense. So what was the union's response to this lawsuit?
Well, they argued that the whole thing should be thrown out because of something called NLRA preemption.
NLRA, the National Labor Relations Act.
That's the one. It's like the big federal law that covers all kinds of labor issues, including strikes. And their argument was basically that federal law trumps state law when it comes to labor disputes.
Okay, so they were saying this is a federal issue, not something for state courts to decide.
Exactly. And at first, the trial court actually agreed with the union and dismissed the case.
Oh, interesting. Case closed.
Not so fast. The Washington Court of Appeals took a look at it and said, nope, this lawsuit can go forward. They reversed the trial court's decision.
Okay, so back and forth we go.
Back and forth. But then the Washington Supreme Court got involved and ended up siding with the union, reinstating that dismissal.
All right, so break that down for us. What was the reasoning behind that?
They relied heavily on what's called the Garmin preemption doctrine. Basically, if a state law claim involves conduct that is arguably protected by the NLRA, then state courts should generally stay out of it. It's a way to make sure there aren't a bunch of different conflicting rules about labor disputes all over the country.
So consistency across the board.
Right. And they decided that the strike in this case was arguably protected under the NLRA, so the state court lawsuit was out.
Okay, but then it went to the U.S. Supreme Court, right?
Right.
What did they decide?
They reversed it. They sided with Glacier and said that the lawsuit could go forward in state court.
So that was a pretty significant shift, huh?
Big time. It really clarified the limits of this Garmin preemption doctrine.
All right, so let's unpack the Supreme Court's thinking here. Why did they rule the way they did?
The majority opinion, which was written by Justice Barrett, focused on a key exception to the whole Garmin preemption idea. They basically said, look, we all agree the NLRA protects the right to strike, But that right isn't absolute. It has limits.
I see. So what kind of limits did they lay out?
The court pointed to a longstanding principle that the NLRA doesn't protect striking workers if they don't take reasonable precautions to protect their employer's property. Like, if the work stoppage suddenly creates a situation where the employer's property is in danger, they have to take steps to prevent that damage.
Okay, reasonable precautions. Got it. So how did they apply that idea to what happened with Glacier?
Well, the majority looked at the facts and said the union in this case didn't do what they should have to protect Glacier's property.
In what way?
Well, everyone knew that concrete was perishable, right? It was literally being loaded into trucks, as they called the strike. They had to have known what was going to happen.
It was like setting a time bomb almost.
Yeah, that's kind of the point Glacier was making.
Yeah.
And the majority agreed with them. It was a deliberate move to destroy the concrete.
And the drivers returning with the loaded trucks and then just abandoning them?
Yeah, that didn't help their case either. The majority basically said, come on, they could have taken steps to prevent the loss, but they just chose not to.
So for the court, this was more than just the usual economic impact of a strike.
Right. It wasn't just about lost revenue from the concrete. They were really concerned about the deliberate destruction of property. They drew a line between economic harm, which is usually part of a protected strike, and intentionally messing with the employer's stuff, which isn't.
Interesting. So a lot of nuance in this decision.
Yeah.
Now, were there any other opinions from the justices?
Yeah, there were a couple of interesting concurring opinions. Justice Thomas, joined by Justice Gorsuch, basically said they weren't huge fans of this whole Garmin preemption doctrine.
Okay. What were their issues with it?
They thought it had become too broad, too powerful. They suggested that maybe it was time to go back and rethink the whole thing, make it more grounded in the actual text of the NLRA.
Interesting. So a bit of a warning flag about Garmin.
Yeah, something to watch for sure. Justice Alito also wrote a concurrence, which Thomas and Gorsuch joined as well.
And what was his main point?
He was very clear that in his opinion, the NLRA absolutely does not protect workers who intentionally destroy their employer's property during a strike. He cited previous cases that said strikers could be held responsible for things like trespass or violence against property.
So for him, Garmin shouldn't even apply in cases where property destruction is involved.
Right. It's just not what the NLRA is about, according to him.
Okay. Now, what about the dissenting opinion? What did Justice Jackson have to say?
Justice Jackson argued that this whole question of whether something is protected under the NLRA should be left up to the National Labor Relations Board, the NLRB.
They're the experts on labor law, right?
Exactly. And she pointed out that in this very case, the NLRB's general counsel actually filed an administrative complaint, suggesting that they thought what the union did was protected under the NLRA.
So Justice Jackson felt the Supreme Court was stepping on the NLRB's toes, so to speak.
Yeah. She also worried that this decision might scare workers and unions away from using strikes, which is a fundamental right.
Right. A cornerstone of labor law.
And when it came to the reasonable precautions part of the majority opinion, she suggested that the union actually did take some steps to try to prevent the damage. She pointed to the fact that they told drivers to bring the trucks back to the plant, which, in her view, shows they were trying to prevent the concrete from hardening immediately.
So a very different interpretation of events.
Sure.
Okay. So we've gone through the facts of the case, the legal arguments, the different perspectives from the justices. What does it all mean? Why does this decision matter, especially for law students who are listening to this?
Well, unions are definitely going to have to be much more careful about how they handle strikes, particularly when it comes to perishable goods or sensitive equipment.
It's not just about going on strike anymore. The timing, the strategy, those things matter.
A lot. They're going to have to think hard about whether what they're doing could be seen as intentional property damage, because if it is, they could be looking at lawsuits in state court.
So for employers, this decision is a bit of a win.
Yeah, you could say that. It gives them a clearer path to sue unions in state court if they think their property was damaged during a strike, especially if it was intentional or reckless.
Interesting. So this case really does shift the balance of power a bit.
I think so, potentially. It seems like the Supreme Court, or at least the majority, are starting to take a closer look at this Garmin preemption doctrine, which has been a big part of labor law for decades.
So this case could lead to even bigger changes down the road.
Definitely possible. We might see more challenges to the NLRB's authority in certain areas of labor law. It's something to keep an eye on.
For sure. So for all the law students out there, what should they be paying attention to when they study this case?
This reasonable precautions test is going to be huge. They need to really understand how courts are interpreting that and applying it to different situations.
Like what counts as reasonable?
Exactly. And the other thing to focus on is intent. Did the union deliberately set out to damage the property? That's going to be a big part of the legal analysis from now on.
So it's not just about what happened, but why it happened.
Right. The motivation behind the actions.
Got it. Anything else?
I would tell them to pay attention to any future cases that cite this decision. Glacier Northwest could be the beginning of a much bigger shift in how the courts handle these kinds of labor disputes. It's really a fascinating area to follow.
Absolutely. So as we wrap up this deep dive into Glacier Northwest v. Teamsters, one final thought for our listeners. How might this reasonable precaution standard play out in different industries, not just with concrete? What about, say, perishable food or expensive manufacturing equipment? How do unions and employers need to adjust their strategies and thinking in light of this case?
Oh, lots to consider.
It's a really dynamic area of law, and this case just adds another layer of complexity. So for all of you future lawyers out there, keep this one in mind as you continue exploring the world of labor law.
Definitely do.
And that's it for today's episode. Thanks for tuning in to The Deep Dive.
See you next time.